we're drinking town with a football problem. Hey everybody, welcome to the Piffles Podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Alex.
I'm Steve.
I'm Frillin.
I'm Amy.
Welcome back, Amy.
Thanks.
Make sure you give us a follow on Twitter, at PifflesPod. You can follow me, at RealAlexD.
You can follow me, at Sapamod.
I'm at Fernie635.
And I'm at CFL Hottie Bowl.
Give us a like on Facebook, facebook.com/PifflesPodcast. We're on Instagram, just search PifflesPod. And make sure you check out the website, PifflesPodcast.com. As always, Piffles Podcast is brought to you by Bryn Werrett at Royal LePage Regina Realty. Check out BrynWerrett.com. That's BrynWerrett.com. Coming up on this week's show, we're going to talk about a game, a really good game for the Riders, 41-8 for the Riders over BC. But we're going to start off the show in a second here. Obviously, the trade that happened, and we got to talk about that.
Oh, you mean the preseason trade?
Yeah. According to StubHub, anyway. We'll have an entrance into the Hottie Bowl this week. We'll see if we have a rant this week. Our Coney Island Poutine Cafe Piffles player profile. And we'll have our Piffles picks this week. So before we get started, the Piffles Bowl coming up this Friday. Still time to join us for the first ever Piffles Bowl in conjunction with Hope's Home. We'll be having a few touch football games at Mosaic Stadium in Regina on Friday, August 18th from 6 to 8 p.m. For $50, here's what's included. A t-shirt, 2 hours on the field at Mosaic Stadium. We'll be drawing for prizes, a food or drink coupon at the Great Canadian Brew House afterwards. And of course, most importantly, that $50, all the proceeds go directly to Hope's Home. So time is still on your side. You can still get tickets into this. Make sure you let us know. Follow us on Twitter. You can send us a message there, on Facebook, anywhere that you see us. Send us a message. You can also email us at pifflesbowl@gmail.com. So send us, just say that you're interested. We can do the rest for you, and we'll be good to go. So make sure you join that and reserve your spot today.
And if you can't make it out, please stop by the brew house. There's some really good prizes lined up. We got a custom rider tattoo. We've got Coney Island. We've got, what else do we got?
We got Laser Quest.
Yeah, Laser Quest, Bushwhacker, Last Straw.
Sparkle Balls.
We got some Sparkle Balls. Everybody loves Sparkle Balls.
And of course, we have the big prize is going to be a signed football signed by probably about half the members of the 2017 Rider team right now. So that's a pretty great prize.
Well, that's a team that just won 41-8. So that's against a West team. That's a rare ticket.
That ball's looking pretty good right now. So make sure you join us. It's going to be a lot of fun. And just send us a message on Twitter, Facebook, anywhere you see us. Let us know. Email us, PifflesBowl, PifflesBowl@gmail.com. So just get a hold of us. We'll get you in there, and it'll be a lot of fun. Now let's kick off the show here. The biggest news before we get to the game, obviously, on Tuesday, another trade for a quarterback to Montreal again. The Riders acquire quarterback Vernon Adams and a fifth-round pick in next year's draft, 2018, for defensive back Tavon Campbell, a third-round pick in 2018, and a third-round pick in 2019. So I got a few questions for you guys here. Is Vernon Adams the new future?
I don't know if he's a new future, but at least he's a solid option at the position. He gives us another option if Brandon Bridge, Marquise Williams, we say it, James Franklin next year. There's a lot of available talent out there. This is just more depth at the best at the most important position on the field.
Yeah, we all know that Glenn is likely a goner at or before the end of the season. That leaves us with Marquise Williams and Brandon Bridge. Do we know for sure that Brandon Bridge or Marquise Williams are going to work out? No. Do we know that Vernon Adams is going to work out? No, but it gives us three solid options moving forward.
And Brandon Bridge is actually a free agent after this year, too. So this is looking at something for next year, because Vernon Adams, when he got traded from BC to Montreal last year, signed a 3-year deal in Montreal. So that was for last year, this year, and next year. So no matter what, we have a quarterback under contract for next year, and is a young guy. So there's a just little insurance plan just in case Brandon Bridge finds a new home. And looking at the teams in the East, everybody out East needs a quarterback.
It's funny that you mentioned an insurance plan that isn't Kevin Glenn.
Yeah, he's the ultimate insurance plan, but they're building for the future without a veteran quarterback, and it's nice to see. I actually thought when Darian Durant got traded to Montreal, when that trade first initially happened, I said, please at least let Vernon Adams be in that trade coming back. because then we'll at least go Young, Vernon Adams, and Brandon Bridge. Let those guys face each other in training camp, and may the best player win. Obviously, that didn't happen, but that might be something that we see next year.
Yeah, one thing I like to see is we've got three quarterbacks under 25 years old. Hopefully, Brandon Bridge resigns, or we can bring in a young guy like James Franklin. But this reminds me a lot of 2013 Edmonton Eskimos, where they had Matt Nichols and Mike Riley competing for that number one job. Obviously, Nichols got hurt, and it automatically went to Mike Riley, but that turned out beautifully for them.
And it's a huge step difference between the beginning of this year, when our two number one options were Vince Young and Kevin Glenn, Vince Young was 35, Kevin Glenn 38. Now we got three options under 25. You can't go wrong there.
Now we talked Brandon Bridge here. Is this the end of the Brandon Bridge experiment? Because he's been looking pretty good every time he's actually come into a game or preseason for the Riders. And every time he's come into a game itself, he's actually looked really good. But apparently he's no longer the first backup plan at quarterback for next year.
I got to say no. I think it'll be an open competition. Assuming, of course, again, the aforementioned James Franklin doesn't make his way here, because we know Jones has a soft spot for him. That might be the only wrench in the open tryout camp, but I think it's going to be a complete open spot.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say it's the end of the road for Brandon Bridge. Maybe Vernon Adams has the edge, but it'll be a good competition in the future.
And I also have Franklin. So what is this? We've kind of touched on this. What does this mean for James Franklin? Is obviously we're not going to give up, you know, a player and a couple picks for Vernon Adams, and then give up more stuff for Brit or for Franklin during the season later in the year. Where does Franklin go now?
I think this was clearly at the end of the 2017 chance for James Franklin. Not that there was going to be one. The moment the Riders put some potential on the field, there's no way the Eskimos are going to be trading a potential star quarterback to a division rival. That was just, it wasn't going to happen. In preseason, I could have seen it. Once the team rolled out, wasn't happening. I don't think it changes a thing for the free agency next year. If James Franklin's available, I would wager a fair amount that we go after him pretty hard.
The way I see it, there's at least three teams in the East that are looking for a quarterback, especially one for the future like James Franklin. I think it was going to be hard for us to get him anyways, unless, you know, we really overpaid him in free agency. But I expect Edmonton is going to trade him to an Eastern team in the off season, you know, get a couple draft picks or a player, something like that. And then, you know, he'll be in that Eastern team, likely at Toronto or somewhere like that.
Look at everybody out in the East and Toronto. They're going to need quarterback. Ricky Ray is made of glass now at the end of his career, basically. And look at their quarterbacks that played last week. I didn't see the game, but Fajardo played in the second half. Apparently he didn't look that bad, but he's still an unknown commodity. And then Matthews absolutely sucked in the first half. So they need something there. Ottawa, with a veteran quarterback with Trevor Harris, even though he's still young, they're 1-6-1. That's a little worrisome. Plus, I believe he's a free agent after this year. And then you look at Hamilton, while they're 0-7, and ever since Zach Kolaros came back from his torn ACL, he hasn't looked like himself. He looks scared in the pocket. He has happy feet, and he's just not there yet. He's still a good quarterback, but I think you're going to start seeing the transition of him to a backup permanent quarterback, kind of like a Kevin Glenn and almost like a Travis Lule kind of thing. And who knows with Montreal now? They have Drew Willey behind Darian Durant again, and Durant, as we all know here in Saskatchewan, isn't necessarily I'll argue that he's one of the top two toughest quarterbacks in the league with him, with Mike Riley. But with his injury history, you know he's going to miss some games, and that's just how he's always been. Drew Willey's not the future. So there's four teams in the East looking at the next couple of years that have nothing in place. So I like this move to get Vernon Adams now, and that's why it's so puzzling to me that Montreal would give up on Adams right now with really no plan in place behind Durant.
To me, it seems like there had to be more to it. I wonder if perhaps Adams just wasn't happy going from end of the year starter to easily third on their depth chart. Perhaps this is one of those, hey, send me packing, I want to go somewhere where I have a chance to play eventually. Who knows? But he seems excited to be here, as most players are when they get traded.
So we welcome Vernon Adams to the team and see what he can bring. And I think that's going to bump Marquise Williams back down to the practice roster. And we'll see what happens after the bye week. Now, before that trade, obviously, we have that Rider game recap to get to. 41-8 win. I wrote loss on there. Sorry, guys. I think it was just a force of habit just to put
just
loss.
Just so used to it.
Yeah. 41-8. Riders absolutely dominated BC, moving the record to 3-4. Again, I'm going to start with the questions that we normally start with. Who looked good?
I think we got to change this question for this week. I don't think it's necessarily who looked good and who looked bad. It's who looked great and who looked good, because I can't think of a single player that looked bad.
I really have a problem arguing that. This was probably the best team performance I've seen from the Riders, I want to say, since Labor Day when we crushed the Bombers 60-0. Like, this was the perfect team game. Everybody played well. Hell, De'Ron Carter almost had an interception.
I mean, yeah. Ed Gainey being selfish and ripping the ball out of his hands.
He wanted that franchise record, obviously. He wanted that Cadillac.
So let's get right to it. Who looked good? Obviously, Ed Gainey, we can't not talk about this. 4 interceptions, tying a CFL record, only the 9th player ever to get 9 interceptions in a game.
He could have beat the record.
He almost did. There was an out pattern where he dove and almost caught the ball there, too. He had a tip pass defended. So the ball was around him quite a bit. He had that chance.
He had that fumble recovery that Javon Johnson forced. Yep. Right into his hands.
5 turnovers directly into his hands. Absolutely incredible. Of course, there was that pick 6 basically to start the game, getting the Riders, getting the momentum going, and that was such a huge thing, too, especially after Carpinho missed the first field goal. And it's like, oh, okay, there's our chance to get ahead. Well, it's 1-0. That's not really ahead. And pick 6, and we're off to the races after that. So Ed Gainey, you're going to hear from him a little bit later on in the show. He was just phenomenal.
For me, the easy standout is Nick James. And I said it on the post-game show, and I'll say it again. That was the first time I can remember seeing actual pressure from the 3-man rush. We've been harping on that all year long, and this is why it worked at Edmonton. They had good defensive tackles up the middle that could cause pressure. We haven't had that. Nick James brought it, and we saw it, and it was a completely different game. They had pressure on whoever was behind center most of the game.
I'm going to mention a couple special teamers. Christian Jones, he looked great on returns.
He was fantastic. Other than the one over-the-shoulder fumble that he had, he was great.
But the other one, Steve mentioned this during the game, Kevin Francis, he was great on coverage. If he got the tackle or not, he was down there. He was forcing the returner to go one way or the other. He was just amazing on coverage.
Yeah, I said it as we were watching it. Every time we punted the ball, the first thing you saw was Kevin Francis about 5-6 yards away waiting. He was making a lot of big things happen on those special teams.
I'm also going to give a shout out to the rest of the D line, notably Willie Jefferson. He only had 1 tackle. That was his entire stat line in the entire game, but he was absolutely making the BC offensive line look foolish. He was taking on double teams and beating them, especially in that 3-man rush. And on the other side of the D-line, Toby Antiga, he ended up having 2 sacks, almost had an interception as well. He was all over the place and shooting the little free throws after he got his sacks, so it was just easy points. And he was just, I thought the whole D-line, and that's what happens when you have a strong force in the middle, like you said, Steve, with Nick James. He was able to take that double team in the middle, and the ends were allowed to go out and just do their thing and not have to worry about, you know, containment or anything. And they just, that D-line was phenomenal. I can't say enough about that. I'm the advocate that's 100% against 3-man rush, unless it's, you know, some sort of prevent defense you're playing at the end of the game and moving some parts around. But that was absolutely phenomenal. And if that's the 3-man rush that we get, I'm okay with it in certain scenarios.
The last thing I'll mention is, we had questions going into the game, going 3 imports on the offensive line. They answered that quite well, I think. Having Dennis slide into guard, Labatt into center, Bruce Campbell in at left tackle, that looks to be a great move.
I think that was the difference, was Bruce Campbell on the edge. He's a big guy. And it was nice to see him come out of retirement and finally make his way onto the field. That made a huge difference. And it sucks to see an all-star tackle like Derek Dennis get moved inside. You never want to see that, but
it worked
with Bruce Campbell and Derek Dennis side by side. How do you get by that?
I'm still not a fan of putting 3 Americans on the offensive line. But if that's the result we're going to get, then I'm all for it because they looked absolutely great. And I'd rather, I mean, with Caleb Holly being hurt and not being able to play the game, that had something to do with it as well, I believe. Maybe they knew something in practice that he wasn't 100% and they were going to kind of take it cautious with them and just make that easy ratio change there. I'd still like to see Blade Dak get a little bit more time on the field. Who knows, maybe that'll happen after the bye, or who knows what's going to happen. It's Chris Jones's team, so, I mean, nothing's set in stone ever. But eventually I'd like to see Blade Dak get in there a little bit more because he's going to be an anchor for this team for 10 years.
Honestly, with you said it's Chris Jones' team, for all we know, Daron Carter is going to line up at offensive tackle one day.
Well, he lined up at cornerback after Casey Rogers got hurt and, like you guys mentioned, almost had an interception.
That was after 1 week of practice, too.
Yeah.
The thing I like best about that is all we've heard from Daron, like about Daron Carter before coming here, is he's a me guy.
He's anything but.
Yeah, he stepped up in practice and said, I'll do it. He just wants to get on the field. And he didn't look half bad, and he was covering Chris Williams. That's not an easy guy to cover. Javon Johnson saw that last week. And Johnson's a damn good defensive back. And I was really interested to see that. I didn't see it at the game. I didn't even notice it until afterwards. And that tells you how well he did. He didn't look out of place at all.
Now we're still kind of talking about who looked good. You guys said you don't really have anything for who looked bad. I do have one. Daron Carter. And you're going to say why? Because he got out-jumped by Ed Gainey on that interception at the end of the game. Dude, you're like 5 inches taller than Ed Gainey. There's no way you should lose a jump ball to a defensive back.
But
so that's my, you look bad, because there's nothing else I was upset about.
I'll kind of steal this from Belton Johnson. He had a beef with him after the game. Derek Moncrief, he got the pick. He realized the rule that he fell down, he could get back up and run with it. But he was so slow on that
return. Oh, he was gassed by the 30-yard line. He was looking around, and there was a convoy there, and then all of a sudden there's six Lions coming up behind him, and he was gassed.
To be fair, two of those Lions were Chris Williams and Chris Rainey, who, you know, they're
running
fast.
Down the fastest of defensive backs, let alone a gassed linebacker.
Well, I mean, when you fall down and make a catch there, once you get up and start running, it's not like you're at top speed or anything by any means. So hitting the ground and getting back up right away, that does take some out of the body. But, yeah, I'd like to see him, you know, be able to take that all the way, because it should have been a pick six as well, especially with all the blockers out with him.
You know who might have had that? Tavon Campbell with that 40 speed.
You know, he'd have to first make the roster first. But that's not our problem anymore.
This is what happens when you actually have depth across the board. You can make trades for more depth.
Okay, now I have a question here written in front of me for you guys. Is this actually the start of the turnaround? And we kind of think about this every time we see the Riders play well at home, and then they go and, you know, crap the bed on the road the next week. But is this finally the start of the turnaround?
Simple answer, yes. I think this is the week the team finally sees the potential and that they can compete with not just the weak East, but an actual, you know, relative top dog in the Western Division. That's something that sticks with you, kind of like that preseason win. It might not be a big deal at the time, but you remember games like this.
I think this is a question that we can't really answer until our next game against Edmonton. We got to see how they play on the road against a tough West opponent.
And that's where I'm reserving my judgment, is until we see what happens in Edmonton. As great as that game was, and it really shows that maybe if that's the way the defense is going to play, then maybe that is the turnaround. I'm still not that confident going into Edmonton unless Mike Riley's not playing. And he's doing everything he can to will his team to win, even when the rest of their team is getting decimated by injuries. I'm still not confident in that game at all.
I would be. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do Rider Nation a favor. I've been picking Edmonton to win. Because I keep saying, or Edmonton to lose, sorry. I keep saying these injuries have to catch up to him eventually, right? I'm going to pick Edmonton to beat the Riders. And I don't remember the last time I actually picked the Riders to lose. But here we are. I might just do that next week for the good of Rider Nation. So
sometimes you have to take one for the team.
Right?
And the final thing I want to mention about this game is the diversity of strength shirts that were brought out before the game. Obviously, with what happened in Charlottesville on Saturday, the league kind of reacted, and these diversity of strength shirts on the front and then on the back, it was the what we're made of kind of promotion that they had last year or a couple years ago. We're a league full of Haji Rizulis, Buonos, and just, you know, Quongs, Lancasters, and had 30 names listed on the back of the jerseys. And it basically shows that we're open to everybody playing in the league. We have guys that, you know, Solomon Elamimians from Nigeria. So I think I heard on TSN during the broadcast when I rewatched it that except for Antarctica, there's a player from every single continent playing in the CFL right now. So it really does show that diversity is strength because they're making the strength of the league. So bringing out these shirts, obviously, it was a kind of a very quick turnaround because they weren't supposed to roll these shirts out till later on in the season. But as we found out later on after the game, we actually talked with Brody and Lawson. We talked with Brody and Max from the CFL Snap that they had to get these shirts. They picked them up on Saturday, threw them in a suitcase with Max, and Max ended up having to bring them to Regina with them and just had a suitcase full of shirts to give to all the players and coaches. And I love the shirts. They went on sale on Tuesday. At first, they sold out. You could get some after that, so we ended up getting ours. But absolutely phenomenal shirts.
The thing I liked best about the whole thing, I love the diversity of strength message, but I love the fact that the league had the wherewithal and the thought to say, we've got these shirts coming out next month or a month or two away, but we need to roll them out now and to get it done. That says a lot to me about the league, and it says a lot about the people involved with the CFL, so kudos to them for the work it took to get these shirts out to Regina, get them on the website, get it all rolled out in a weekend.
And this is a Randy Ambrosi thing. This was his call. He wanted that done right away, and I like that direction of the new commissioner. I think they've done a lot of good stuff with their social media the last couple of years. I've been kind of critical of the CFL and the Riders the last couple of years of their social media, just not really engaging fans. That's all they're doing now, and it's great. I love seeing it. And this is a Randy Ambrosi initiative to get those shirts out that quick. That was his call, and he said, get these out right now. We'll do whatever it takes. Get them. And it looked great. So again, kudos to the CFL for getting those out. Great initiative, and all the proceeds are going towards CFL alumni and Pure Later Tackle Hunger.
Oh, aren't they, every shirt that's bought, they're donating another shirt to a charity or something?
Absolutely. So every shirt that's bought, another one's given away.
And
so that's
all,
great.
And all the remaining proceeds go to the CFL Alumni Association and Pure Later Tackle Hunger.
So good job, CFL. Everything for a good cause. Now moving on from that game here, we've been missing it the past few weeks, but this week marks the return of the Hottie Bowl. Amy, take it away. I like you a lot, lot. All we want is hot, hot. Boys, boys,
boys. You like boys and cars. Boys, boys, boys. Well, this boy was born January 29th, 1988 in New York, New York. He is 6 feet 3 inches, 212 pounds. He attended college at Cincinnati. He spent a little bit of time in the NFL on some practice rosters. In 2015, he signed in Toronto, then moved over to Edmonton in 2016. That's all I got. It's really short this week. He is Vidal Hazelton, number 15, wide receiver with the Edmonton Eskimos. And you can follow him on Twitter at Vidal_Hazelton7.
So another Edmonton Eskimo off the list. That's two now.
I only have one left.
Ooh. Welcome to the Hottie Bowl, Vidal Hazelton.
Welcome. He's a cutie.
P.S. Don't forget, you can get your Hottie Bowl merchandise at piflespodcast.com. Check it out in the shop on the website.
Coming up next, we talk with star of the game from Sunday night, Ed Gainey, on this week's Coney Island Poutine Cafe Piffles Player Profile. And much more. Stay tuned.
Piffles Podcast is supported in part by Bryn Werrett at Royal LePage Regina Realty. A longtime volunteer with your Regina Thunder, Bryn is a proud supporter of local football. Check out BrynWerrett.com, that's BrynWerrett.com, while you enjoy the rest of this episode of the Piffles Podcast.
Time now for this week's Coney Island Poutine Cafe Piffles Player Profile. I really want to know.
This week, Ferlin and I had a chance to talk with and apparently give motivation to defensive back Ed Gainey. We talked to him on practice last Friday, actually. So without further ado, Here's Ed Gainey.
We want to know more about you, the person, not necessarily on the football field, but we'll start with on the football field. We're joined here with Ed Gainey. You're looked at as a leader in the defensive backfield. You're still a young guy relatively in your career. How does that make you feel being a veteran presence and taking that advantage of being the guy in the backfield?
Me being a veteran and it's just kind of coming on me this year. It's been kind of tough. It's had its rough patches, but I'm learning a lot. I'm learning a lot in just how to communicate with different guys and how I have to, be careful on how I just interact with different guys, because everybody's different and everybody can't necessarily take coaching or constructive criticism the same way. So it's just helped me on my communication skills and helped me on, learning how to react in certain situations and take my emotions out of things.
Outside of football, what is Ed Gainey like?
I'm a laid back kind of guy, I just like to just chill and enjoy my downtime. I'm fairly goofy,
Are you the prankster in the locker room?
I'm not necessarily a prankster, but I'll be involved in any prank if there's one going on. So, I just like to have fun on, whatever's fun at the moment. I'm with it.
So throughout your career, what's the best prank that you've been a part of?
When I was in Montreal, we used to have this thing where we used to go around people's lockers and we used to just, we all getting out of practice and we're taking all our tape off, and we put it all in a little ball. And I remember one time De'Ron Carter was sitting in his locker and they took the ball up and threw an alley-oop to one of our guys. And De'Ron was sitting in his locker, guy had his towel on, just only his towel, threw it up, caught the alley-oop and dunked it on De'Ron while he was in his locker. So that was probably the best prank I've been a part of.
Now in this locker room, who's the guy that does that kind of thing? Who's the big prankster?
I probably have to say De'Ron. He's always involved in something, man. He's a fun guy to be around, and he's gonna always say what he wants to say, and be the life of the locker room. So that's pretty much De'Ron on that.
So we obviously know you're talented on the football field. Do you have any outside talents?
I just had an interview with a little girl, a dream interview, and she asked me what kind of special talents I had, and I said I'm pretty good at singing off the field. So,
what's the number one song you sing?
Right now, I listen to Bryson Tiller. He has his second album out right now, so I listen to his whole album, and I sing along with every song, to be honest.
Okay, the number one question that our listeners have, dogs or cats, and why?
Dogs. I don't know, man. Cats, they kind of like, they're real sneaky. And I don't know. I get this little eerie feeling about cats, They always kind of like sneak up on you and you don't even know it until they're right behind you. I've never had a dog before, but I've always wanted a dog. They're like, man's best friend. So I really want to get me a dog pretty soon. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Hey, you can take one trip anywhere in the world, dream vacation. Where are you going, and what are you doing? And money's not an option. Like you can go do whatever you want.
Okay. I would probably go to California and just try to hit every exclusive party there is. So I just want to be behind the scenes, getting private access to all the parties on the hills, parties in the mansions, wherever they got, and I just want to see the land and stuff like that. So California's a beautiful place. And also, if I can add a second one in there, I recently, we've been talking about Banff a lot, and I just want to knock that off my bucket list one day and maybe take my family out there and go see what they have to offer.
What does Ed Gainey do for the bye week?
Well, my son's, he's going to come up on Saturday, and he's going to watch the game, and they'll be here for the bye week. So I'm going to do a couple appearances, and I think one's with some kids, just running some kids through some drills. I'll have my son out there. Hopefully he can just, watch and interact with the older kids. He's still 9 months, so I just want to have him out there, see what daddy's doing. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I'm just going to be hanging out around here, getting in touch with the fans and stuff like that.
What's the best place you found to eat in Regina?
Earl's is my spot. I love Earl's. I love their dynamite rolls and the chicken and wontons. Those are my favorite on the menu.
All right, well, last one for you. Smack talker in the CFL. You go up against the receivers all the time. Who's the one guy that brings the biggest A game in a smack talk game?
Smack talk game. I would say Manny, but he's not. He don't really talk to me no more. I think he realized once he started talking junk to me, it helps me play better. Dang, that's a tough one right there. If it's not him, it's Darius Bowman. He doesn't really talk to me either, but I don't know, man. I think these guys, they don't like to talk to me anymore. They
Do you throw it back at them?
Yeah, I throw it back all the time. I think they, man, like I said, if I'm talking junk out there, that means I'm playing at my A game. So I think the receivers, they don't really like to talk too much junk to me anymore.
Ed, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate you.
Ed Gainey must have been talking a lot of smack because, man, did he bring that A game. So, since we're all good luck, tell us who we should talk to ahead of next week's game against Edmonton. Proven fact, whoever we talk to has a career game. So, let us know who you want to hear more about, and if there's a question you would like to ask them, tell us what it is, and we'll ask them for you. Now, moving on, before we get to this week's rant, let me speak for a minute on my rant from last week. If you missed it, I called out the team for seemingly not caring about winning, especially on the road, and giving us fans some false hope, and that I'm sick of being promised that this team will do good, and nothing changes. First, thanks for all the feedback, good and bad. I really do appreciate that. Second, no, I'm not a bandwagon jumper. I didn't just become a fan of this team in 2007 and again in 2013. I've always been a fan and always will be. That said, that doesn't mean I can't have a sour opinion on the team once in a while. My only real question is, when did fans of this team accept mediocrity? Why is it okay to only have 4 championships in over 100 years? Why is it not okay to demand a winner? Let me know. Maybe I don't get it. Don't play the you're too young, this is nothing card. That's a stupid argument. It's not like I decided when I was born. Anyways, my question, why is mediocrity okay with this fan base? Are we just happy to be invited to the party? Let me know on Twitter, @RealAlexD. If you find us on Facebook, send us a message. Let me know if I'm just totally out to lunch or if actually wanting a winner is a good thing. Now, time for this week's rant.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
Now, my rant goes back to that diversity as strength initiative from the CFL. No, it's not related to the shirts themselves or the CFL, but the people that are bitching and moaning that the CFL needs to keep themselves out of politics. You have got to be kidding me. When we're looking at what can only be described as a messed up world right now, it's really great to see the CFL sending out a message of diversity and positivity. Guess what, folks? Sports aren't just sports to many people. Greg mentioned it in his article today on PifflesPodcast.com, and it's a quote that I have to agree with and I have to share with my rant. Nelson Mandela once said, "Sport has the power to change the world. It has the power to inspire. It has the power to unite people in a way that little else does. It speaks to youth in a language they understand. Sports can create hope where once there was only despair." So to the CFL, I say, thank you for your message of diversity. Please continue to share those messages that people desperately need to hear in this day and age.
I just can't believe that there's people upset with the message that was being sent. That shows just intelligence level to me right there.
Yeah, I can't believe we're in a day and age where a sports league can't have a political opinion, especially one as positive as diversity is strength. This isn't like they're going all neo-Nazi on us. It's a good thing.
And to me, that's not a political answer. That's not a political response. That's just being a decent human being.
The problem is, in Canada, I think Justin Trudeau has basically been using the word diversity as a, what do you call it?
Soundbite.
A soundbite. What's the problem with that? Diversity, regardless of where you fall on the political spectrum, is a positive thing.
Well, not exactly wherever you fall on the political spectrum. there's a spot way in the far right that it's not a good thing, and that's the people that are complaining.
And to me, you look at sports across the board. Like, we're seeing the You Can Play initiative across basically every major sport right now. You know, leagues are taking these messages and trying to get them out. It's not about politics. It's about bringing people together and trying to make us all more united. And nowadays, that's not a bad thing. And I can't get how people can fight that. It
grinds your gears.
It grinds my gears. That's a perfect word for it.
Three words, but yes.
That's how mad it makes me. I can't count.
Well, you're a Rider fan. That's kind of our specialty. Anyway, well said, Steve. Now, finally, we have our Piffles Pick'em to get to. This week, week 9, Riders are on the bye. So we got Edmonton at Winnipeg, Ottawa at Hamilton, Calgary at BC, Montreal at Toronto. I'll go first. I'm going to go with everything that I think helps the Riders this week. Maybe not necessarily what I think is going to happen, but I'm going to go with it. Edmonton over Winnipeg, Hamilton over Ottawa, Calgary over BC, and Montreal over Toronto.
You're picking Hamilton to win.
I'm picking Hamilton to win because they're playing Ottawa, and the Riders might end up having to fight Ottawa because they're ahead in the standings right now of Hamilton. So
I wasn't listening to that before part.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. No problem.
And I hate wanting Edmonton and Calgary to win, but we have a better chance to catch Winnipeg and BC in the standings. Now that we actually have the season series with BC, we didn't mention that earlier. So if the Riders and BC end up finishing tied at the end of the season, the Riders get that tiebreak and they're ahead in the standings. So absolutely huge, and that's why running up the score was so important and the team didn't let off the throttle when it was 29-0 at halftime, because they had to win by 16+.
That's also why those 15 points scored in the last 4 minutes are kind of a huge deal. I was kind of nervous, you know, making sure that we had that 16-point lead at the end of the game.
Yeah, it was absolutely huge. And once BC got it down to, I don't even remember what it was. I think it was down to 26 points. I think it was 36-8 or 34-8, whatever the score was. When they got it down to there, it was like, okay, well, if they score again and get a late garbage time touchdown, that's not looking good for the season series. So it was very important, and the Riders have their first tiebreak against a West team in, what, 3-4 years? So probably since 2013, I think. So 2014.
Yeah, I think we had it against Winnipeg.
Winnipeg.
In 2014, so yeah.
So it's been a long time since we've won a season series against the West team, so there it is.
My turn.
Your turn.
I'm going away teams across the board. Edmonton, Ottawa, Calgary, Montreal. Maybe? What?
Well, I'm not gaining any ground on you. I'm not gaining any ground on you this week because I'm going Edmonton, Ottawa, Calgary, Montreal, all away games.
I'm sitting here staring at the picks I've made, and I'm going,
There were some tough games to pick this week. Edmonton, Winnipeg, and Ottawa, Hamilton was a tough pick for me.
Yeah, I think all four of these games are relatively difficult to me only because BC's going to go up against Calgary pissed off. Edmonton and Winnipeg. Edmonton just keeps finding ways to win.
So does Winnipeg, though.
Actually, maybe even more so. Depends on which fourth quarter team shows up.
Yeah.
All right, I'm just going to draw out my picks. Let's go with Edmonton. So Winnipeg will win. I mean, I'm going to change that back then.
I was going to say, are you playing opposite?
Yeah.
Opposites this week?
I'm doing the Amy from last year. I'll go Winnipeg. I think Hamilton wins the toilet bowl.
So glad that we're not playing the toilet bowl anymore.
Especially when our stadium apparently looks like a toilet bowl.
Yeah. Let's go Calgary and Montreal again.
All right, there we go. That's going to do it for us this week. Thank you so much for joining us. Coming up on next week's show, we're going to preview the Riders at Esks, which is Friday, August 25th at 7:30 p.m. We'll have Engaging with the Enemy. We'll have a rant. Another entrant into the Hottie Bowl. Our Coney Island Piffles player profile. And much more talk. Until then, make sure you follow us on Twitter. Follow us at Piffles Pod. You can follow me at RealAlexD.
You can follow me at Safamud.
Myself at Fernie635.
And I am at CFL Hottie Bowl.
Give us a like on Facebook, facebook.com/PifflesPodcast. We're on Instagram, just search PifflesPod. And check out the website, PifflesPodcast.com. As always, Piffles Podcast is brought to you by Bryn Werrett at Royal LePage Regina Realty. Check out BrynWerrett.com. That's BrynWerrett.com. Thanks for listening.
We're a drinking town with a football problem.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.